Everyone please rise. Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the Second District of Texas is now in session.
Good morning. Please be seated. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. I see some faces we haven't had in here before, so it's nice to have you with us, especially this is our first day of the new fiscal year 2009. We do have three cases on our 9 o'clock docket. We will probably hear the first two, take a very short 5-10 minute break, and then hear the third case. The first case is Durham versus Arcadis. If the clerk will please announce counsel.
May it please the court, Mr. Paul Rich will argue for appellants. Mr. Tad Keener will argue for appellees.
Mr. Rich.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a premise liability case. Our clients were either tenants and or guests of the apartment complex. The lessee at the time had entered into her original lease under the previous owners at the time when they were required to comply with the property code statutory requirements for particular locks on the door. Shortly after the new owners took control and took ownership of the apartment complex, there was a break-in early morning hours.
How shortly after?
The sale consummated on July 2nd of 2004. This occurred in January of 2005. There was a break-in. A male held both women and the male friends hostage, proceeded to rape the two women, proceeded to order the gentleman to perform certain sexual acts, and this occurred during the early morning hours. There was a companion lawsuit that was filed and resolved in Dallas County, and that was against the current owners of the complex. The law, from our vantage point, raises issues and raises matters of fact for the trier of fact to determine. Unfortunately, I was not present during the argument of the motion for summary judgment, but the associate that handled it for us reported back that in this particular matter, the trial judge just could not envision prior owners being held responsible for something which occurs after they surrender or transfer ownership to the property. This court has addressed that issue in the past. We are dealing with a transfer of ownership. We are dealing with a responsibility that occurred during the time frame that these individuals, these defendants, owned the property. And that was the statutory requirement for certain lockage. The report that was attached, the expert report, indicated that that was an invitation. The reason why the statute and the regulation was passed by our legislature was to minimize the potential of break-ins. What is different about this case and the cases that we've reviewed, specifically the Moeller case out of this honorable court dealing with section 353, is that these facts fit into the exception of the general rule. The general rule being that prior owners should not be held and do not have a duty for those things which occur after their ownership ceases. But in this particular case, and based upon the summary judgment evidence, which is part of this record, there was testimony that this particular property was under the Safe Team review. The SAFE team in Dallas was a response from the Dallas area to residential and commercial properties where nuisance level of criminal activity was occurring. It gave them an opportunity pursuant to Section 125 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code of coming in and trying to get the owners and or managers an opportunity to respond to minimize the existence of criminal behavior. The record is replete with evidence that not only was the SAFE team already involved with the prior owners, but continued to communicate with the prior owners after they had sold the property, effectively July 2nd, although those communications, although directed to the prior owners, were never passed along to the new owners. Counsel argues that because the individual specific woman who was on site for the prior management company and the new management company, that she knew, thus the new owners knew, does not fit in with the discovery and deposition testimony that we developed. That woman has testified that she did not feel that it was incumbent upon her to communicate anything that might have occurred during the term of the previous owners. So in this case, we at least believe there are enough factual issues that the summary judgment should not have been granted, and that our clients should have the opportunity of allowing a jury of their peers to determine whether or not the facts are met and whether or not the individuals who owned the property prior to the break-in and rape in January of 2005 and prior to July 2nd of 2004 are culpable in any fashion. We feel that it's fairly discreet. Clearly, when we're looking at the Bond case versus Otis Elevator, that clearly the Supreme Court distinguished because we were dealing with not a transfer between owners. Here we have a transfer between owners. If we take a look at the Lefmark case as well, it gives us guidance in this matter. Clearly, it is our position that Section 353, as recognized by this court in the past and not disallowed by the brethren of the Supreme Court, allows us to in fact say that based upon the facts, the summary judgment evidence in this case, that summary judgment should not have been granted.
What remedy do you have against the previous owners that you don't have against the present owners?
The same, Your Honor. The same.
But the facts that gave rise to SAFE applied to the second owners whether they knew about it or not, yes?
Yes, sir.
So it seems to me that the liability of the previous owners is that they get brought in as third-party defendants for fraud or whatever, you fraudulent inducement or any number of things I could think of as between the previous and the present owners, because the present owners got, let's say, stuck with
That's fair, sir.
With liability to you, which maybe may or may not should have had they been given the information which they should have been given arguably at closing or after. So
I believe the testimony from the representative from the current owners clearly was that if it had been disclosed at the level of criminal conduct regarding all the break-ins and the robberies and all that occurring on this property, the complex is in excess of 300 units, that they might have thought twice about it. But the bottom line, whether or not people are entitled to credits and set-offs and contributions, that's for another day. The limited issue, with all due respect, that we present ourselves before you today for your consideration and guidance is whether or not the trial judge was correct in excluding every other reasonable possibility based upon the summary judgment evidence that we submitted. Expert reports, depositions, you know, all of that, and said there is no factual issue for determination. We believe that based upon the case law and specifically the Mueller case and the progeny of that, that there are ample questions of fact that were raised in response to the summary judgment, and that this court should consider in its wisdom reversing and remanding back to the trial court.
Well, if there is no duty, then the facts are immaterial. So I'm assuming the trial court concluded that once the ownership was transferred, there was no duty as a matter of law anymore. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but then the factual complexities fall away.
I would agree that in premise cases, I've been doing these many years now, our first threshold, when we are presented with a case or someone is asking us to review, the first thing I do is look at 911 calls. First thing I do. Okay, as far as the primary consideration, whether or not there was a duty and whether or not the duty was met, this court has found in the past that based upon the exception to the rule, that when you have a change of ownership, and if there is deceit or hiding or conscious withholding of information, that has created a duty because the prior owners on their watch created the environment which allowed this to occur. This is not something out there in the abstract, out there in the heavens. This is something very, very basic. The fact of the matter is many of these individuals came into our state for tax benefits. They owned the property. When they failed to take their responsibilities as landowners and allow individuals to be brutally attacked or harmed, then we believe that the court system must stand up and say this will not be tolerated because you withheld information consciously. You withheld information in order to consummate a deal, the transfer of property, the transfer of a 300-unit apartment complex where many women and children reside. It was in the making. This was not an isolated circumstance.
Okay, let's look at it practically.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's assume there is a duty. What can they do? They're not the owners. They can't come onto the property. They can't go in and change the locks because they're not the owners. So if there's a duty, realistically, what can they do? Give the new owners a call and tell them they need to fix the locks?
There's one case that I looked at in preparation that said, and I think it was even the Lefmark case, where it said, would you require the prior management company to call the new management company to let them know they received a letter from one of the tenants and that there had been a holdup at the store which had the second holdup where someone was killed. Our job, when I'm on the defense side, is to try to mitigate potential visibility, liability. In this particular case, there was a continuing duty at the time, while these individuals still owned the property, to take care of the property code requirement. That's number one. Number two, to take steps in conformity with the SAFE team.
So the duty was before the property sold?
Yes. That they, in fact, created the situation. They did not disclose the situation to the new owner.
That's the other guy's lawsuit. The tenant knew the locks, and it wasn't a matter of failure to disclose to the tenant. It was a failure to disclose to the new purchasers. So are you suing the management company, or are you suing the old owners?
We're suing the old owners.
Okay.
And the reason for that with the management company is there is an issue with Lefmark. Since the management company changes, the management company, according, I believe, to Lefmark, did not have the responsibility. Okay, since the exception under 353 has to do with vendors, it has to do with ownership. Now again, I want to apologize to the court and to counsel while I'm in front of you all this morning. Our office messed up, and I put the sword to myself because I had ultimate responsibility. We were in 2007, our office was in somewhat disarray because we went through a first-time theft by one of our legal assistants, which resulted in prosecution over in Dallas County. And our system dealing with our scanning was off. That's the only explanation I can come up with as to the notice of appeal, which was limited only to one of the owners and not the second set of owners. But I wanted to apologize.
So you are agreeing that the Zarkades appellees are the only appropriate appellees?
No. I believe the other owners are as well. We felt that it was too late to orally make a motion to your honors to go ahead and request an amendment to the notice of appeal, even though I believe everyone was represented by the same counsel and the arguments at the motion summary judgment level were pretty much the same.
All right.
But at this point, the only defendant appellee that is in front of you is the Zarkades. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Rich. Your time
Thank you
is
very much.
Up. Mr. Keener.
May it please the court. Thank you. On behalf of the Zarkades appellees, we are here to bring forth our position in this case. I do appreciate counsel acknowledging that we cannot get confused with the word prior owners. We cannot get confused with respect to the management company. What happened here with respect to the summary judgment is that summary judgment was entered by Judge Walker with respect to all of the prior owners and the prior management company. And then the notice of appeal is only with respect to the Zarkades appellees, which are two Zarkades trusts that were in the chain of title for 15 days. The affidavit of Peter Zarkades was not objected to at the trial level. That affidavit is very, very clear, and I'd like to highlight some of that, because when we're going to talk about duty in just a couple of minutes, let's be sure and look at the facts as we see them. In paragraph 3 of Mr. Zarkades' affidavit, now this would be page 131 in the record. At no time did I or anyone associated with the trust ever participate in any matter whatsoever with respect to the management, maintenance, supervision, control, operation, decision-making with respect to the property in any way. The interests were purchased by the respective trusts as an investment without an intention to occupy, possess, manage, or control the property in any way. I was never advised nor saw any documentation of any conditions, dangerous or otherwise, with respect to the property. I did not inspect the property. I did not know of any crime levels or statistics. Was never advised of any criminal activities. Did not investigate the existence of any security devices on the property. I had no authority, was not involved, and did not receive any information regarding security of the property or safety decisions. All right, that is very important. The only notice of appeal and the only party is the Zarkades appellees, who owned this property as an investment for a few days because it was a 1031 IRS exchange. They had an investment in a limited partnership, which was converted to an ownership for a very, very short period of time. Okay. How can a duty arise on those facts? All of the facts that counsel has referred to in his argument do not address the limited party that is before this court, Zarkades. Okay. Secondly, counsel talks about an exception. Well, to have an exception, you have to have general rules of law. Premises liability now in Texas is pretty well developed with respect to common law duties. First of all, the general rule is that a party is not responsible for the criminal acts of another. General rule. Second general rule, a transferor of property is not responsible for conditions on the property at a later date. So we're dealing with two bedrock foundation issues here. And then we have the exception, whether there was some kind of a duty to disclose. All right. Now let's remember that affidavit. Unrebutted testimony, very clear, of a very, very short period of time. Proximate cause. These are just fundamental issues that we're all aware of. Proximate cause. How can the transfer of property 6 months prior, July of 2004, have anything to do with the incident of a third-party assailant in January of 2005? There's no proximate cause. The duty is being tried or attempted to be created by the plaintiffs. In some way, the inference is trying to get, well, it's a duty to these apartment dwellers. It's not. Whatever this relationship is between the two, and Justice Dauphineau, I think you were talking about that, is that where does it go? Well, it's, or and possibly Justice McCoy, it's not a duty to them. It was to the current owners. I think the law is very clear with respect to that. Frankly, unfortunately, I've got to address some of the sanctionable issues in this case with respect to this appeal. The testimony in the affidavit that I prepared for the court was very clear and unrebutted, and no response prepared. It sets forth the time that was spent in this appeal. I believe that the justices are well aware of what the standard is. No reasonable expectation of reversal. There's no question that the appellant's brief talks about, even the argument talks about the prior owners. Even a little bit talks about the management company. Unfortunately, those parties are not before the court. This is a case that should have never been filed. I did not file sanctions at the trial court level because I thought, I'm just going to go through with summary judgment, fact issues. I didn't do it. There was a prior lawsuit by these plaintiffs against the current owners, which was settled. And then they turn and file against their prior owners, and we incur all this expense. Now, the trial court expenses are not before this court. They're not, because I don't like to do things like that. But here in this appeal should have never been arguably mentioned with respect to the other owners, and then with respect to Zarkades, it shouldn't have been filed there. The affidavit goes through the time and effort that we spent. The clients are upset in this case. This case should not be before this court. There is no reason for this exception under 353 to be considered by this court. 353.1a talks about whether the person knew or had reason to know. It's 353.1a, and it's set forth in the brief. Zarkades could not fall within the exception. He did not know and did not have a reason to know because of the very limited role. The statement that, well, we've got these out-of-state people that come in here and invest in properties, well, you know, that's kind of kicking dirt a little bit. The business relationship with respect to Zarkades was very limited, very short, and was something that the courts frankly need to recognize because it is a legal transaction.
So, Mr. Keener, you are acknowledging the existence of this exception to the general rule, at least within the Second District Court of Appeals area?
Yes, Your Honor, I am. It is a case, and that issue of 353, and that's why we went through and filed those motions for summary judgment at the trial court level and kind of pushed through where we needed to go, because I do acknowledge that 353 is there. But 353 is very clear that party must know or have a reason to know, and so that's why we went through and belabored that point of reading the Zarkades affidavit.
And the Zarkades affidavit, does it give the time frame for this 15 days of ownership?
Yes. Okay. The Zarkades affidavit It clearly sets forth that there was one of the trusts owned a 13% interest and one of the trusts owned an 11% interest. Zarkades did not own these in his individual capacity. He clearly states in the affidavit that it was only in the chain of title. The special warranty deed demonstrates that the trusts were only in the chain of title for 15 days, and then goes on and explains what that role was. It would be different, possibly, if the management company or the prior owners were before this court, but they're not. This lawsuit was filed just to see if they could kick up a little bit more dust, and it was not properly watched and paid attention to. And at this time, that's why my clients have instructed me to discuss these issues with respect to the sanctions. We've asked for either 100% reimbursement of expenses or 3/4 for the other three entities. There's really more entities, but I group the ownership entities as the BNC as the owners, and then the prior property management company. And then there's still another trust called the Mock Trust, which it kind of mirrors the Zarkadis role. There's three other entities, so I've asked for 75%. And then finally, I've asked for the court to fashion an equitable remedy if the court doesn't want to do any of those. And I respectfully ask the court to handle this in any way it sees fit. I believe that concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keener. Mr. Rich?
With all due respect to counsel, we're not here to try to dig up more dust. We're trying to make our clients as whole as possible because of what occurred to them. I would ask the court to take a look at Lefmark, where it talks about, but even assuming that we were to adopt Section 353, this is when the Supremes are having their discussion amongst themselves as to, we've never really accepted it, but we haven't disallowed it, recognizing that brethren of courts of appeals around the state have recognized 353. It's limited in application to vendors of land. While Section 353 does not define vendor, other sections of the restatements employing that term refer only to a former owner of land. We don't have to talk about control, because in the cases that I've read, it's there as a disjunctive. These appellees were former owners of this property. Whether or not they elected to put their head in the sand, that is their choice. As owners, for whatever reason, tax benefits, whatever the reasons, they should have responsibilities in our state. It is for those reasons that we do what we believe our oath requires us to do, and that is to exhaust every reasonable remedy available to us under the law. With all due respect to counsel, I disagree that it's a black and white situation as it relates to 353. It is not. There was reasonable grounds and reasonable area to massage and inquire based on the facts, based on the deposition testimony of the current owners and what was disclosed to them during the time of the sale and the closing. During the time that they kept on, the prior owners receiving correspondence from the SAFE team of the City of Dallas threatening that they were going to take them to litigation. They were the ones that did not do, at a minimum, what was required of them. With all due respect, we ask the court to consider our arguments, and on my part, on behalf of my clients, ask this court to reverse the what we would consider legally inappropriate granting of the motion for summary judgment. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Rich. Mr. Keener, we appreciate your arguments and your briefing today. Your case is submitted, and you are excused. To estate of Richard Glenn Wolfe.